Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and I'm very happy to be joined for the first time, by Mr. Jazz Keegan. What's up, Jazz?
No, I'm pretty good, man. Finally got this work together. A bit of a scheduling conflict, but I think we got around it.
Yeah, but between technical issues and calendar issues and living across the world issues, I think we got it all figured out. So Jazz, as you might have been able to tell from his accent, is Australian.
G'day, mate.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought I'd give you one of those.
I almost said that, but I didn't want to be insulting.
To be honest, I don't think I've ever said that in my life.
Have you ever seen a kangaroo?
No, I do not live near any kangaroos. The best I got is maybe a wallaby near a zoo, but I've never actually seen a kangaroo up close.
A wallaby in a zoo. This man is an imposter, my friends. This guy.
I'm in the wrong area of Australia for that, man.
Do you drink Foster's?
I have drank a Foster's, but no, I wouldn't say that's my drink of choice.
Does it truly mean Australian for beer? I doubt it.
No, not every beer is Foster's, but Foster's is probably one of the least common drinks in my area, actually. Also, it does not taste very good.
I live in Texas, so people think that I live on a farm. Although, there's farms in Kansas too, I guess. But anyway, I don't ride a horse. I don't have a cowboy hat. So there are lots of, as you experience certain preconceptions about Australia, I experience certain preconceptions about Texas. So I'm right there with you, man. Do I sound like I'm from Texas? Do I have a country accent? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. To be honest, I've never really thought that I had an accent either, but I don't know if it's coming through on your end, if do I sound distinctly Australian or anything.
To me, you sound distinctly Australian. Let us know, listeners. But I throw in words like howdy and y'all and fixin' to. Those are some cultural identification marks that I'm from Texas. But other than that, I have a pretty neutral voice, I think. It's fun to think about what people think your life is depending on what part of the world you live in. Never seen a kangaroo does drink Foster's. I'm very disappointed, Jazz.
Yeah, basically, if you've seen that episode of The Simpsons where they go to Australia, it's almost nothing like that. As disappointing as that may be.
Well, yeah, if you see any TV show where it takes place in Texas, it's nothing like that where I live either. So I'm glad we're on the same page there. Jazz and I found each other online. Now, I'm not sure exactly. I forget because it was a while ago when we started talking, but you used to be the host of a Houston Rockets podcast. Or you know what it was? Did you email me first, Jazz? I think that's what it might have been.
Yes, I actually I found your show because I was trying to have a reason to get back into Smallville because it was one of my favorite shows growing up. And obviously I found your show because there wasn't really any Smallville podcasts that were going on week to week. So I finally found yours, and I think I emailed you about seeing what the process is to get on the show, and I still told you that I was doing the Houston Rockets podcast just because I think I had heard through the podcast that you were from Houston, and I thought that might have been my way in to get onto an episode, and luckily it was. Unfortunately, that was kind of a defunct podcast right now, but I thought that was our connection, and finally we got this going.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. Yeah, that was definitely your way in, because I was fascinated by the fact that, first of all, you have a Houston Rockets podcast. Second of all, you're Australian. And third of all, your name is Jazz, which is traditionally one of the rival teams for the Houston Rockets. So I found that a very interesting combination of facts. So.
Yeah, it's very, very eclectic when it comes to my taste. It was kind of a weird way for me to become a Rockets fan, because I've only been watching basketball for maybe 3 years. But when I did look up on the history and find out that Jazz was one of the primary rivals, I was like, this is very coincidental.
I can tell you pretty much anything about 1990s and early 2000s Rockets basketball. Basketball is probably it's my second favorite sport. Baseball is my favorite sport. I used to play baseball. I still play softball on occasion. And basketball, though, growing up here in Houston, I was here when the Rockets won their back-to-back championships in 94 and 95. So those were the days, my friend. So those are the only major championships Houston has won in sports. No offense to the Houston Comets, Houston Dynamo, Houston Aeros, or Houston Energy, or any of these other teams. But look, you're not part of the Big Three or Big Four if you count the NHL now. So we don't have an NHL team, so that leaves the Astros, the Rockets, and the Texans. The Texans are new. They got here in 2002. I have very strong opinions about them. I could probably go on a three-hour lecture about my complicated feelings on the Houston Texans. But I love the Astros, and I love the Rockets. So it's a good time to be a fan of both, by the way. As we record this, the Astros have the best record in baseball, and the Rockets are in the Western Conference semifinals playing their other main rival, the San Antonio Spurs, huh?
Yeah, it's a pretty hot series right now. Like, no indication of how it's going. But I did hear that the Astros were doing well, just because, like, a lot of the people that I follow on Twitter, like, that go for the Rockets also go for the Astros, obviously. So, like, I did hear that they're doing well. I'm not really, like, that into baseball, just because, like, it's not really a very common Australian thing to watch baseball. But I did hear that the Texans might be doing well this year, so I might end up watching some football. But, yeah, it's a good time to be a Rockets fan, I would say.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. So, do you? What is the first? I'm just curious. What is the first Rockets team? Remember, did it have Harden on it?
It was the I think it was the 14-15 Rockets team. So that was like the first time they went. To the conference finals in quite a while. So
oh that man, was, that, like, that was a good year to start watching. Did yeah, you watch most of those games that year, like the playoff games?
Yeah, like it was pretty hard to actually to get some Rockets games, because I ended up having to buy the NBA League Pass, but I ended up watching the majority of those games, and I've been a fan ever since, because, like, that, as you said, that was a pretty fantastic year to become a fan, and ever since then, it's just been, like, well, we had that year last year where it was kind of not that great, but this year we've been doing really well, so I've been enjoying my time with that.
Yeah, getting rid of Howard was the answer.
Yeah. He wasn't a great fit, I would say.
And we'll get to Smallville in a second here, guys, but bear with us. This is my podcast. I don't want to talk some Rockets here. So I think that unfortunately for the Rockets, they make big moves all the time. They've traditionally made big moves, and they're hit or miss. But I always respect the fact that they're making big moves, right? Because even going way back until, like, the post-championship years, like, you know, the late 90s, they traded for Charles Barkley. I mean, they had Scottie Pippen on the team for a year. They did. They got Yao Ming. They traded for Tracy McGrady, blockbuster trade there. I mean, they got Harden, which was like the steal of the century. I can't believe we got James Harden when we did. We got Howard. I mean, sometimes these things work out, sometimes they don't. We got Jeremy Lin at the height of Lin's sanity. So the Rockets are always in the conversation. Unfortunately, that hasn't translated into on-the-court success. Up until, like you said, a couple years ago, which is the best season we've had in a long time. We went to the conference finals and lost to the Warriors. So,
yeah, let's not talk about that. But just looking back at the history, the Rockets have never been shy about making big moves if it means, like, possibly improving the team, and that's kind of what I've admired about them, actually going back in their history. Just, like, it's kind of unfortunate for me, like, missing all this, like, great stuff. Like, I would have loved to live through that. McGrady and Yao area, even though they were kind of never really able to play consistently together, but that's whenever I look back, that sounds like an awesome time to be a fan of the Rockets.
Yeah, man, the 08-09 season, when we got into the semifinals again, but we lost to the Lakers because Yao had gotten hurt, and then T-Mac got hurt. And again, I'm an Astros fan first, so forgive me, but I believe 2008 was also the year of the 22 game win streak, or was it 2007?
That sounds right, because I do remember. I think that was the same year, because then I remember in that Lakers series that I looked back on, that had the game where Yao got out with his foot injury, but then he made that, like, miraculous comeback. I'm pretty sure that was the same year as the win streak.
I thought so as well. Yeah, those are good times, man. And then, you know, again, we'll get to Smallville in a second. But always hold on the Rockets is the next podcast, right? So when you bring your podcast back, change the name to that. You have my full approval.
Oh, nice.
Did you watch the? Because I feel like this game in particular is what got me back into, like, watching basketball. Because during some of the T-Mac and Yao years on and off, and then especially when it was just Harden, and then, you know, Omar Asik was the center. I'm like, really? That's I love how our poster for, I believe it was, I don't know, 2012 or whatever it was. Like, initially the preseason poster was not 2012, but it might have been 2011. But anyway, it was Jeremy Lin and Omar Asik, right? And then, like, 2 months later, they update the poster, and it's James Harden and Dwight Howard. You
know? Just, like, what happened here?
Yeah, it's like, ooh. But I tell you, man, the game that really got me back into skyrocketing my Rockets fan and back to what it used to be would be that Game 6 versus the Clippers.
Yes, yes. I do remember
in L.A. I watched that entire game, and, you know, we were so far behind. that I started, you know, we're going to tie it in here. I believe I just started reading some, like, a stack of comic books I had sitting around. I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to leave this game on because I've been, you know, I've been keeping my pulse on this season. This has been a great season for us, but it's over. But I feel like, you know, I'm going to leave it on just in the background just to finish it out. You know, as I'm reading and I'm looking up the screen, I'm like, hey, we're coming back. We're coming back. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when it was incredible. It's like, it was like, you know, midnight here in Houston when that happened, you know, because the NBA has these ridiculous scheduling. Like, hey, we're going to start a playoff game at 9 o'clock Pacific, which is, you know, ridiculous.
That time in Australia, I think it's like usually the games are like 9 a.m. or like 11 a.m. So like it's something crazy like that.
Do you watch them on delay or what do you do?
No, generally, like, because, like, my work schedule is kind of erratic, so I actually do get to watch a lot of them live, but as you were saying, that, like, that kind of cemented my fandom with the Rockets. That game was probably one of the best that I've seen, even the games this year, like, nothing is really compared to that, and just, I don't know if a lot of your listeners will be able to, like, understand the magnitude of this, but that comeback was led by Corey Brewer and Josh Smith, two very unlikely people to lead back their comeback.
Yeah, Kevin McHale putting Harden on the bench. Amazing. And then for the comeback, I love Harden. Okay, I love how he has personality. I love he has flair. I mean, he obviously has skill, right? MVP candidate this year. But, you know, Harden, he's extremely hit or miss. Like, he can do amazing things, and then you just see him, like, take the bad three or try to go in for the foul. He doesn't get it. You know, it's like going for the and one. He just gives the ball over. So it's extremely frustrating, but at the same time, it's like when he screws up, I just have to laugh. Like, that's classic Harden right there. So...
Yeah, he's, as I said, he's hit a bit, but like when he hits, there's nothing better to watch.
Oh yeah, so good, man. That that game one versus the Spurs is pretty amazing, though. You talk about great games to watch. Now we have some work to do here as we record this. The Spurs and the Rockets series is ongoing, so hopefully it turns out in our favor. Now I have a very good friend who is a Spurs fan for Ooh. Some reason. And yeah, I've learned a lot about the Spurs talking to her this year, and yeah, but what are your thoughts on Kawhi Leonard?
You can't really hate the guy because he never really like complains or anything. Like, he's never like too up or too down. Like, he's always so even keel. Like, it's hard to hate a guy like that. But just like playing against him, like when you play against a player that's that good, you kind of hate him just because he's making it so hard for your team.
He's definitely cut from the same cloth as the rest of the Spurs, the most boring team in professional sports, right?
Yeah, he's just like Tim Duncan reincarnated, basically. It's so odd, like.
And I can say that because she's not going to listen to this podcast, but yeah, I mean, do you realize that Tim Duncan? I didn't realize this until, you know, before the series, you know, all these articles are coming out about Rockets Spurs, and the Rockets never played. I'm sorry, Tim Duncan never played the Rockets in the playoffs. We're the only team in the Western Conference that he did not play. Because we have not played them since 95 when Hakeem embarrassed David Robinson, who won MVP over him for no reason. We won the championship that year, so take that, San Antonio. Also, San Antonio, and again, I can say this because she doesn't listen to this podcast, back-to-back, all right? You don't have a dynasty if you can't win back-to-back championships, okay? You got to defend the title, guys. So that's something that the Rockets, and I know it was 20 years ago, but the Rockets will still have that over the Spurs, that the Rockets won back-to-back championships. There's nothing like winning a championship and then winning it again. Like, that, like completely legitimizes the fact that you won the championship, in my opinion. So, Rockets-Spurs, it's a rivalry, right?
Yeah, it's incredible that, like, it's been, well, you said 94-95. Like, it's been that long since they've played each other in the playoffs. And, like, it's such a weird situation. Like, the first round of this playoffs was almost similar to the situation of the playoffs in that round, where it was, like, two MVP candidates where the opposing team's best player is probably going to win it. But everyone thought that like Harden deserved it. It was like, it's such a weird situation that like that was in the first round, and now we're playing the Spurs in the second round. So it's been weird so far, to say the least.
Well, it'll be interesting to listen back to this when this episode comes out and see where we stand. But hey, man, go Rockets!
Yes, go Rockets! And go Smallville!
Yeah, thank you, Smallville. we are here. This is a Smallville podcast. We haven't quite turned it entirely into a sports podcast yet. Usually, you know, we'll have to have an episode in the future with you and my friend Lance Laster, because he's a huge Rockets fan, basketball fan. So I'm sure we could have. Well, look forward to that, listeners. We'll have a rant twice as long about basketball and the NBA in that episode. So that'll be fun. But today we're here to talk about Precipice, the 19th episode of Smallville's second season. So, you know, when this episode came up on the schedule, I was like, okay, this is a bad one. So I'll have Jazz on. We'll have some fun ripping into a horrible episode. And then I watched it again, obviously, for the podcast, as I do. And I said, you know what? This is not as bad as I remember it. What were your thoughts, Jazz, revisiting this one?
I guess, like I kind of, like, I did hear that you mentioned to me that, like, that you thought it wasn't as good as you remember it. But, I don't know. Like, I watched it and I was like, it was one of those ones where it was kind of just like, I didn't think it was great, but I also didn't think it was horrible. It was kind of like in that middle range. And, like, as you said, like, it wasn't awful. And, like, it was a pretty quick watch. So, like, I can't really say that I hated it, but, yeah, it was pretty good.
No, I probably haven't watched this since, well, it aired in 2003, and then I got the DVDs, obviously, and I watched it again then, whenever that would have been, like, 2005 or 4, but I had never watched it since, right? Yeah. So, well, so what about you? How did you come to Smallville? Like, did you, obviously, I don't think you watched it back in the day, so how did you find it down there in Australia, and what's your Smallville fandom like?
Yeah, it was weird. Like, as you said, like, it wasn't really in the time where, like, a lot of American shows were coming to Australia, but, I think, like, my first episode was probably Insurgents. I think that episode just probably aired on the Always Hold On To Smallville feed, but, and I think I was probably, like, 10 at the time, like, cause it was so long ago, but, and, like, I don't think I'd ever watched, like, any, like, comic book related things or, like, even read a comic book, so I think Smallville was probably my first, like, comic book related thing that I'd ever been exposed to, which is odd to say to most people, but it was probably that, or like the X-Men animated series was like the first thing that I've ever watched, like, that was comic book related. And I don't think I even watched, like, all the episodes, like, going forward or before that. And it was maybe like a couple years later that I started buying the box sets, and I kind of caught up. And then I was I think my first season was season 5, which is, was that the Brainiac season?
Yes, the Brainiac season.
Yeah, so that's when I, like, started watching it week to week, and it was kind of just, like, once I had caught up, I kind of didn't want to stop, and then I watched it week to week until the end of when we still didn't see Clark ever put on a Superman suit.
Until the bitter end.
Yes. I do have fond memories of the later seasons, I do hear that, like, a lot of people didn't like the later seasons, but I do have a lot of fond memories for them.
Oh, I have fond memories of every season of this show for various reasons, but I do really like season 9. I love season 9. I think season 9 is an excellent season. Ironically, the one season that's entirely Lex-free other than one mention. Well, getting back to Precipice, which is what we're here to talk about. In Smallville, the official companion, season 2 by Paul Simpson, available wherever books are sold. Al Goff had this to say: Precipice is a case where I think the script was pretty good and the episode itself turned out excellent. Tom Wright did a great job directing it. If you were dubious about the Lex-Helen relationship, I think this is the episode where you really understood why these two people were together. It's our darkest episode of the second season, and it's great. It's beautifully shot, and it goes to the darker corners of the show, which are fun to explore. Emmanuel does a great job as Helen Bryce. She fits into our world really well, and I think she and Michael have a really good chemistry that you can just sense. You can write the best scene in the world, but if the actors don't have any chemistry, you're not going to get the magic. Put a pin in that, and then Goff does go on to say that they had decided on Helen's ultimate path. And he says, quote, "Our intention initially was to kill her off by the end of the season. But we didn't, because Emmanuel was so good, and we knew we could do more with her. Initially, she was going to die on the wedding day," spoilers, but we thought there was some more mythology to be played. So, that's Helen. So, they're saying by this point in the show they had decided what they were going to do with her. I'm not sure if that meant, like, they had decided they were going to kill her off, but then they changed their mind later. But episodes like this, and then episodes, if you go back to episodes like Visage, where Helen has a subplot, you know, about teaching Lex to be a better man and all that, right? Good character development for Lex, if you look at it in the context of when it happened, right? But then what we go on to find out about Helen and where her character goes, the beginning of season 3, it's like, was this all a long con? Was this, I mean, what's this all about? What are your thoughts on that, Jazz?
Yeah, it's weird, because, like, I have done a bit of a watch into the future, like, season 3, like, again, because I hadn't watched it in a while, and just seeing where a character goes, like, I don't know if you want to spoil too far ahead, but when you, like, spoiler alert, just in case everyone doesn't want to hear it, but like, when you find out that, is it that she's been working for Lionel, or no, she's just been, like, conning Lex into getting his money all this time, and like, it's like, I don't know, like, if you're supposed to be seeing those seeds planted this early, because, like, I never really, you know, you never really get a sense of that. Like, it always seems like there's, like, a genuine, like, connection between them, and I don't know if she's doing, like, really well, or, but you said, like, that they were planning to kill her off, so I'm not sure where they were planning to go with this at this point, because, like, I don't know if how true it would be if they're trying to kill her off, considering where we see her character go in season 3.
Yeah, like, they say they're going to kill her on her wedding day. Like, I can only think of On Her Majesty's Secret Service. It's like they're driving in the car, and then Lionel comes by with a shotgun and shoots her. Like what? How else is that going to go, right? I mean,
what a connection. The only James Bond movie with an Australian James Bond.
There it is. Do you like Lazenby as James Bond?
I thought I hated it, but I did rewatch that movie like a couple years ago, and I didn't hate it as much as I thought I did.
Yeah, it's actually a very good James Bond movie. Like, as a film itself, like independently, it's probably one of the better James Bond movies just because of the emotional story. And Teddy Savalas is great as Blofeld, so he's probably the best Blofeld.
Yeah, I would probably have to agree with that. Like, I didn't have too many memories of it, but like just watching it again, he's just pretty good. I could easily see him playing a Lex Luthor. Like, obviously not now. I don't know how old he is now. But I could easily have seen him play like a Lex Luthor type character.
Yeah, he's passed away, as I understand it. Teddy Savalas, I think that was like 1968. Sorry, Secret Service. Absolutely, he would have been next on Lex Luthor. I know people say like, oh, just because he's bald. I'm like, okay, yes, but you have a certain look. Right, and it has to look right. Some people look silly with a shaved head, like James McAvoy. Right, I love Split, but he looks silly with a shaved head. Look at the X-Men movies. Right, McAvoy's silly with no hair. But Teddy Savalas would have been a great Lex Luthor in the 70s. You know, with Christopher Reeve as Superman and him as Lex Luthor. I mean, that would have been amazing. But tangent, as you know, half an hour into the discussion, we're finally talking about the episode. But yeah, so hell, we can get to it here, but. When you look back in retrospect, you're like, guys, did you just retcon everything? Did you think about this when you decided to go where you went with Helen? Because all this character development, like making Lex a better person, like is completely undercut. But you could see it as, you know what, he really opened up to this person and she screwed him over, so that just adds to the layer of Lex's emotional betrayal and, you know, closing off to the world and being less empathetic. So you could choose to look at it that way, and because I'm a fanboy, I will choose to look at it that way. But anyway, I think it's time, Jazz, to get into the episode proper. So let's talk about it. Precipice.
You always had the worst luck with cars.
Paul. What are you doing here?
It must be Kismet. I dropped my cell phone, came back to get it, and here you were. How about I give you a ride home?
Lex is on his way.
Come on, Helen, why wait? Same old Helen. Never wanted my help. Must be different with Lexa.
Yes, it is.
Here comes Prince Charming now.
Helen, is everything all right?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Yeah? Hey. Hello, Paul. I didn't expect to see you here.
Happened to be in the neighborhood?
Twice in one day. Three times if you count last night. Careful, I might start to think you're stalking my girlfriend.
Come on, let's go.
Why would I want to do that?
You're not over.
I was just trying to be a good Samaritan.
So when my mechanic looks over this car, he's not going to find missing spark plugs or sugar in the gas tank?
Lex and I.
You really are paranoid.
No. I'm just a frighteningly good judge of character. I strongly suggest you stay away from Helen.
Whoa, is that a threat?
You seem like a simple guy, Paul. I'd hate for your life to get complicated.
Precipice is the 19th episode of Smallville's second season. It aired on April 22nd, 2003. It was written by Clint Carpenter and directed by Thomas J. Wright. Now, Thomas J. Wright is an interesting fellow because he was actually a big-time genre director. He had directed and became a producer on the show Millennium. Have you ever watched Millennium or The X-Files there, Jazz?
I've caught episodes here and there of The X-Files, but I've never heard of Millennium.
It's a sequel show to The X-Files. It's actually in the same universe, along with The Lone Gunman, a very short-lived show, supporting characters from The X-Files that has been off. But yeah, he was a producer and a director on Millennium. It's probably his most regular work, and most recently he's been on Castle as well. Also done some Supernatural, One Tree Hill, Bones, NCIS, CSI, Firefly. Greg Beeman says in the companion that Precipice was the right marriage of director and material. Tom Wright came from The X-Files and Millennium and a lot of dark shows, and it was only by coincidence that he got this script, but it was perfect because it was very dark, eerie, and creepy. Oh, and before we get into the episode, I must say this episode aired on April 22nd, 2003, which was my 16th birthday. And I have no memory of my 16th birthday, not in a bad way. Like, yeah, let me just say that. But I honestly don't remember what I was doing. I was probably at an Astros game. Traditionally, if there's the Astros are in town for my birthday, you know, about 70% of the time I try and go because it's just an easy thing to do. So I was probably at a baseball game, but I do not remember. So I probably had to set the VCR for this one, went home and watched it afterward. But I don't recall exactly what I was doing on my birthday. But the episode starts out with Alana closing up the Talon. And there's a group of frat boys that are there, and I don't know what are they going to Smallville Community College or something? I don't know, but they're mixing alcohol in their coffee. They're starting to causing a ruckus, and Helen is there, and she's waiting for Lex, and so is a mysterious man behind a newspaper, which kind of sets up the whole plot here. So
the worst spy imaginable.
And I was like, oh, let me pull up this paper. Jazz, correct me if I'm wrong. I might be. Is this the only time Helen and Alana speak in this entire series
together? I can't imagine that they would have many opportunities together. Like, I don't, like, just off the top of my head, I don't really remember them ever, like, speaking to each other, just because, like, their paths would never really cross other than being in the town, and like, this seems to be the only time that it ever happened.
Right.
Like, this didn't really, like, make me itch to see more of it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it was pretty straightforward, and, you know, they're talking about Lex, of course, so it's not even a Bechdel test pass, so, you know, what's the point?
Yeah, right? I was wondering about that one. Like, because they're waiting for, like, she was saying that, like, Lex stood her up. Like, I don't know if that, like, because, like, this is the only time that two women even interact together in the episode. And, like, I don't know. I didn't know if that was a pass or a fail or just, like, a neutral or something.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're talking about, like, waiting on men, and Lana's like, oh, you're talking right, you know, I mean, they relate to that, so yeah, I think that's a fail there, but we'll talk through it. I don't think there's any other, like you said, interactions there, but this gets dark real quick, because Helen leaves, and then Lana's there by herself, and these frat boys get a little aggressive towards her, and the main guy, Andy, like, throws her into a shelf, and then it's like, we're gonna take this into the back. I'm like, this is, talk about dark, this is very dark.
Yeah, this is extremely dark too, like, straight off the bat as well. Just like, it's like I think, like, the first thing that Lana says, like, we don't make that, we don't have Irish coffee here, and then he just takes that to be like, oh, I'm gonna sexually assault this woman. I was like, wow, this is not what I expect from my Smallville.
Like, this is like Law and Order SVU, not Smallville. And you're right, it's right off the bat, there's no ramp up to it, and these guys are such, like, stereotype figures. They're basically, they're just older versions of the trio of bullies from the last episode, Visitor, right?
Yeah,
I mean, but it's your standard issue, like, main guy and his lackeys, right?
This is the worst thing, because, like, you got Andy that's like doing this, like, horrible thing, and then, like, these two guys in the background are just like, yeah, go Andy. I was like, whoa, this is not something that I've been accustomed to ever seeing in Smallville. It was just so weird, and so, as you said, straightforward.
Yeah, but luckily Clark shows up. They never explain why he shows up at this time.
Yeah, I was thinking about that as well,
because they usually throw in an excuse like, oh, I was here to return the so-and-so for my mom, or check on the blah 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 for Lex, but he just shows up. He confronts these guys, they leave, and in the back alley, Clark confronts them again, because Lana's pretty shaken up, because not only has she been, like, you know, threatened verbally, but physically, like, they threw her into a shelf. I mean, that is intense stuff. So Clark is pissed off at this point, right? And he does what Superman does best, he beats up mortals without powers, right? That's what Superman does. That's what I learned from Superman 2. Throw a guy into a pinball machine, crush a guy's hand, throw him down a bottomless pit. That's what Superman does. So Clark throws a couple of these guys 20 feet, doing this classic maneuver. And then he throws Andy into an arriving cop car, because I think Lana hit, like, a silent alarm or whatever. And who is in this cop car but our new sheriff, Sheriff Adams. So what are your thoughts on Sheriff Adams?
I had forgotten about this character, actually, just because, as I said, like, I hadn't watched, like, a lot of these older episodes in so long. But straight off the bat, like, I was kind of annoyed with her, just because throughout the whole episode, it was just, she was so snappy. It was just, it was such a weird attitude for a police chief to have, just, like, whenever she sees Clark, it's like, Mr. Kent, just, like, so aggressive towards him. But I kind of ended up enjoying her, just because she had a lot more of the funny lines in the episode. It was so I guess it was mixed, but I kind of ended up enjoying her by the end of the episode.
Yeah, she's one of those characters where she's clearly there just to stir stuff up, like, Mr. Kent, like you said, so, right? That's, yeah, exactly what she talks about. I mean, she serves a good purpose because Clark is in a lot of police business in Smallville, and someone needs to notice that and have a problem with it. So I get what they were going for with this character, but to me it just didn't work, and she sticks around forever. Like okay, so Sheriff Ethan, the previous sheriff, right? He was in 14 episodes of Smallville, okay? How many episodes do you think Sheriff Adams was in?
Well, as I said, I don't really remember her too much. Maybe like 10, 12?
She's in 23 episodes, okay? She's in so many episodes. And, spoiler, there's an alternate universe episode, a What If episode in season 7. She comes back in that. I'm like, that's who you bring back? Sheriff Adams? But anyway.
The long-awaited return of Sheriff Adams.
She's like, oh, it's Sheriff Adams. Long-awaited. She's played by Camille Mitchell. She does a fine job of the role. She does exactly what the role requires. So she does a good job with it. And like you, I did come to like her. She actually has one of the funniest lines ever, her final line in the show, which Lance and I will quote on many occasions because I remember watching that live and it was such a great sign off. And you know what? No, I'm not going to spoil that for you guys. You have to stay watching till season 5. But Clark has thrown these guys into cars. He's like, oh no, I messed up. And he's about to do his classic, I'm going to run off thing. But then Lana comes out to see what's going on, so he can't super speed away. And then Sheriff Adams pulls a gun out on him, tells him to get on the ground and put his hands up. So Clark's in some serious trouble there.
Pulling a gun on an unarmed person, by the way. That is no procedure.
Well, it's a small town. They do things differently there. So then we come back from the opening credits, and Sheriff Adams is interviewing Lana and Clark about the whole situation. She says, it's a Superman reference. She's like, flying boys, be flying into my car. You know, it's obviously a Superman reference, but I didn't mind. And she says that Clark has been at, quote, more crime scenes than Elliot Ness, which is an extremely dated reference. That's a mention of The Untouchables. I doubt many people know who Elliot Ness is, but she's older sheriff anyway, so that reference kind of works. He's in trouble here, because then we go to the Kent farm, and she's calling him out to the Kents, and he's going to be charged with misdemeanor battery. He's going to get off by not being charged with anything and doing community service instead. And then, of course, Sheriff Adams has another dig at the fact that she's the new sheriff in town. That the good old boy days are over, which is a Dukes of Hazzard reference to John Schneider and talking about how him and the previous sheriff Ethan were good friends, and apparently Ethan just let Clark did whatever he wanted. So
I did not even catch that reference, but now that you mentioned it, I do, like, that does ring a bell. I think you like you missed one of the better lines of Sheriff Adams, like when they're back at the cafe, and I like Ken like asks her like what he's being charged with, and then she just snaps back at him and just like, you're writing a book, Mr. Kent. I laughed so hard at that.
It is funny, like, well, in retrospect now, she's a funny character, but when she first showed up, I just found her extremely annoying, so.
Yeah, like, this is like on my second rewatch, I was just like, I knew what to expect a little bit more, and I was just having a fun time with it.
Writing a book, Mr. Kent. You said this was good coffee. This is great coffee.
You're a liar, you know that? This is great coffee.
Oh, man, Sheriff Adam. You know, she might be closing in on Pete for the most quotable person in Smallville. We'll see. But, Ruby Zero! So we go to Smallville Hospital. This doesn't count as a hospital visit yet because no one's injured or in the hospital bed. But it's Helen's office, and I had to laugh at Helen with her season 2 promo picture of Lex on her desk.
I was going to say that, the press photo of Lex.
I love that. I was talking about this in the last couple episodes when you know, because we just saw Lex's Clark Kent room, right? Or his, you know, his mystery room, but it's basically a Clark Kent room. There's giant pictures of Clark and his family on the wall. It's like, Lex, if you hadn't put those there, you might have been able to spin this somehow. But it's just, anyway. But of course, they're the promo pictures that we've all seen, right? that are on the website and all that.
Especially having it on her desk, like, it's so impersonal for your boyfriend. Just like having just like a full body shot where he's like he's looking directly at the camera like a portrait. It's just like so weird.
This is from the Luther Corp annual report from 2002, I guess. but she has flowers on her desk, and she's like, oh, she smiles, and she obviously thinks they're from Lex, but they're not from Lex. They're from her ex-boyfriend Paul, who has been, I guess, waiting in her office, like hiding behind a door or a coat or something for her to come in. Kind of creepy, huh?
Oh, well, this, like, you learn to expect that from this man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It completely plays into his behavior. Now, Paul here is played by Anson Mount. Now, have you seen him or anything else, or are you familiar with him at all?
He looked familiar, but no, I don't really recall him from anything.
So the only reason I kind of even remember him longer than the small episode is after this, I don't know if he parlayed this into another show, but in the classic Smallville tradition, he became the lead on a show called The Mountain, which was on the WB in a couple years from now, from 04 to 05. So Smallville just start. Some are more successful than others. See Supernatural or The Vampire Diaries, right? With other Smallville guest stars. But The Mountain, not so successful, right? But cut from the same cloth as all these shows. Smallville just putting out shows that are stemming from this show here. And then he's also in the new Incredibles. Listen to me. In the new Inhuman show from Marvel. Do you have any familiarity with those characters?
Is he one of the main guys in the promo photo that they just released?
Yes, yeah, he's actually the center character there.
Is he playing Black Bolt?
Yes.
That is okay. I did not recognize this guy. Well, really, he looks so much different in that photo.
Yeah, he's not wearing a mask, which apparently a lot of fans are upset about. I
do come to expect a turning fork on my Black Bolt, but okay.
I have no knowledge, memory, interest in the Inhumans. Like, to me, I always saw them as, and you know, I'm a DC guy first, but to me, I always saw them as, oh, we need some kind of Marvel saying we need some kind of replacement for the X-Men because we don't have the movie rights to them. So that's the more cynical way to approach their existence. And I don't know anyone outside of like a hardcore Marvel fan that's like, oh yeah, man, I can't wait to see the Inhumans show.
Yeah, like there was this weird period, and because I do read both, but I'm like, yeah, I'm a DC guy. But there was a weird period where I think like it was when one of the new X-Men movies was coming out, and it seemed like Marvel wanted to do as least press on them as possible. So they were kind of really pushing the Inhumans really hard, and there was like four books in the space of one, like a month of one another, coming out at the same time, and like they really pushed it hard, but it kind of like died down in like less than a year, and kind of it's now relegated to like one book that like is not really selling well.
Right.
And then they decided like, oh, let's make a TV show out of that. That seems like a good idea.
Right. Well, Anson Mount, he was also the lead of Hell on Wheels for a few years, which is a pretty popular show. Colm Meaney, who was Chief O'Brien from Star Trek, was also in it, so that's how I know it. And then Christopher Heyerdahl, who goes on to play Zor-El in Smallville Season 7, is also on that show as well. So lots of genre connections in that show as well. So Anson Mount, I think he does a good job here. And is it just me, or does he look like he could have played Superman in another life? Like, he looks very Christopher Reeve-esque, doesn't he?
He does have that like clean, like very Superman-esque look, like a like kind of like square jaw, kind of like very like strong looking character.
Yeah, I looked it up, and he was never on Mad Men, from what I could find. He would have fit in right in with Dom Draper and those guys and John Hamm, right?
I've never watched Mad Men.
Oh man, oh it's so good. But it's more of an American nostalgia thing, so you might not like it. I don't know. But anyway, Lex arrives and. We get some exposition that Paul and Helen are exes. Lex has to cancel lunch because he's a bad boyfriend. Right, that's this episode. Lex the bad boyfriend. And Paul's like, oh, well, I can step in. And Helen's like, oh, you know what? I have to cancel too. My, you know, her beeper goes off at an appropriate time. So it all works out. But Paul drops some passive-aggressive commentary to Lex. Like, oh, that's Helen. Gone 1 second, here the next, or here 1 second, gone the next, or whatever. And just I guess trying to plant some seeds or whatever. And of course, you know, posturing because he's in front of the new guy, right?
Mm.
So kudos for continuity here, because when Pete and Chloe pull up to the Talon, we see Fordman's across the street. Let's not forget that Whitney's family owned that department store. So they get only half continuity points because, from what I recall, I don't think it was across the street from the Talon before. And it looks very different than the one time we saw it in Kinetic. I don't know. I didn't do the screen grabs, and we all go back and look and confirm that. Again, you know, your heart was in the right place, Smallville, with Sean Fordman's there, so I appreciate it on Main Street. So
they definitely tried, and like I do, as much as I don't remember about the earlier seasons, like this street gets a lot of use, and it's always like it's always seems to be busy, and it's like a really it's actually a really like interesting set piece for them to keep going back to, because it's just like it's always like there's always something going on there, and like it just seems like a very like busy place, which is a pretty nice effort for them to go through. And like it always seems like there's something happening on Main Street in Smallville.
Yeah, Main Street USA. It's got that small town feel. It's got the, you know, the Talon is like the centerpiece of it all. And you know, that's a real street in Vancouver. One day I will make a pilgrimage to Canada and go to all these locations, and I definitely want to walk down Smallville and Main Street and check out the talent. I don't know if it's, I assume it's not a theater anymore because there just aren't many theaters like that. But if there is, I would totally go see a movie there. But yeah, Lana comes out and talks to Clark and she says, no charges will be filed against Andy, the frat boy, number one, because it's all hearsay. It's a bunch of he said, she said. And she does ask Clark, like, well, how'd you beat up all those guys, right? And he says, they were drunk, and I was highly motivated, which is a great explanation, right? He's really learning the Clark Kent excuses, isn't he?
Like, it's vague enough where it's just, like, they can't really question it, but it's, with the situation, like, you kind of don't question it, but, it's not so specific that they can, like, trace it to anything. If that makes sense.
No, absolutely. And then, you know, this, well, Lana makes a comment here that she wishes she could have saved herself because Clark can't always be there. And this is the beginning of Kung Fu Lana, which is possibly the worst idea ever, which culminates in the Street Fighter sequel, The Rise of Chun-Li, right?
Yeah, like it's a very odd sequence of events that leads to the, like, we'll get there eventually, but the end of the episode is just she seems to be very adept in a very short amount of time.
Lex gives her, well, she goes to train with Lex, right? Because he gives her pep talk about, you know, self-defense classes, and he wants to teach her how to fight, and he says it's not about hurting people, it's about reclaiming a sense of control over your life. And I like that line. That's true. I mean, that's what self-defense is all about. You want to have the power to defend yourself. But you don't go around looking for trouble. Like, a Jedi uses the Force for knowledge and defense, never for attack, right? So
I don't know, like this with when you look back at these scenes with Lex, like it's just Michael Rosenbaum was so good at delivering like that those like little like sage wisdom like nuggets. It's like I love it whenever he like has a little bit of knowledge because he's supposed to be like that like kind of slightly older but like a lot more like world weary guy. It's just whenever Michael Rosenbaum delivers one of those lines, it just makes me appreciate him even more.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you know, in our next scene here, Helen's car won't start, right? And that's not suspicious because she's the only car in the parking lot late at night, right? It's like a classic horror movie trope, right? She's trying to start a car. She looks out of the window. Paul is there. He's like, "Oh, Paul," and he has the lamest excuse ever. He says he came back because he dropped his cell phone and he came back to get him. What are you talking about, man?
Yeah, he's just not trying to hide what he's trying to do at all.
but to your point about Lex, right, or Rosenbaum, right, Lex shows up because he's just a couple minutes away, and he shows up to get Helen. He gives Paul, like, the whole, like, stay away from my girl kind of thing.
And the best line is when he's about to leave, and he's just like, you're a simple guy, Paul. Like, I don't want you to get, your life to get complicated. Is that a threat?
Just a friendly piece of advice. So, so good.
Oh, so good. So good.
But then Paul goes back to his cheap motel, and he goes full liar liar on himself and beats himself up in the mirror. He's like, I'm kicking my ass. Do you mind?
Like... Oh, God, that's so perfect.
And yeah, that would, not that I've thought about doing it myself, but I've often wondered, like, how hard do you have to hit, like, a mirror like that for it to shatter?
And his reaction just, like, after that is just so nonplussed about it. He's just, like, standing there with, like, blood. Like, that's not flowing, by the way.
Yeah. It's
just, like...
stationary blood.
And he just cracked his head. Like, I don't know how hard you need to hit yourself. But he's, like, gashed open. And he just standing there just, like, it's like, you'll love me. You'll love me sooner or later, Helen. I'm like, what is this guy's problem, man?
We do get a plus one on the tally board to our hospital visit. Because Paul goes to the hospital, and of course he frames Lex. Helen's like, oh my God, Paul, what happened? He's like, Lex. And it's like, sure. Sure it was Lex.
And you've got that classic Smallville, I guess it is a Smallville trouble, like, of having a kind of a like an early 2000s rock song in the middle of all this happening. Just like, I think it was a Chili Peppers song going in the back of it. I was just like, this is like exactly what I expect from early Smallville.
Yeah, it was called "Don't Forget Me" by the Red Hot Chili Peppers, which is, I guess, ties into what, you know, he's thinking about. But you're right. Why? That's, thank you for bringing that up, because why are they playing this pop song underneath this? Like, I understand, like, you start an episode with the kids at school, right? There's some emotional moment with Clark and Lana. It's the end of an episode. You play us out, right? Or there's some kind of montage, right? Those are all acceptable uses of pop songs. And I love it. And everybody who listens to this podcast knows I love the music of Smallville. It's such a slice of my life and, like, in the soundtrack of my life for the time. And I still love it all. But this was a poor choice for music at this scene. Anyway, Lex and Helen end up talking about this in her office, and we get more history about, like, who broke it off, and Helen's the one who broke it off because one of Paul's ex-girlfriends said that he was abusive, but there was she never went to the police, and there was never any evidence, and that kind of thing. So we get kind of a more of a framework here, and then of course the sheriff comes in to talk to Lex, and you know, more of Sheriff Adams, and it feels like, I don't know, like they're really, do you feel like they're really forcing Sheriff Adams in this episode more than she needs to be?
Yeah, like how long is it? How many episodes has it been since Ethan was taken out?
Let's see. This is episode 19, and that was 13 or 12. So it's been 6 or 7 episodes.
Yeah, it definitely feels like they're trying to like establish this sheriff as a no nonsense sheriff, like no guff. But yeah, like they really like. It seemed like almost every scene she was either in the background or just like right in the middle of it and like trying to like cement this as the new sheriff in Smallville.
I feel like she had more scenes in this episode than Sheriff Ethan ever had.
Yeah. It's like Sheriff Ethan was always coming by to just like warn Jonathan about like something Clark did or just like only in like bit parts, but this is like full on.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, we go to our next scene and it's Clark doing community service and it's funny that he's wearing his orange vest picking up trash in Smallville and runs into Lex.
So much trash.
Yeah, so much. What is wrong with you people in Smallville? Like clean up after yourself, people. You know, that's
like
Main Street.
Like a lazy chip packet on the ground, just like lying there.
I assure you, America is not that bad. Okay, we don't have that much of a litter problem, but yeah, it's a complete bag, not even crumpled up. It's like this is Smallville Main Street, people. This is not usually you see these community workers are off on the side of a highway because I guess people throw stuff out their window, which I just find like horrible to do. Do you really need to throw that empty water bottle out your window? I don't think so. But anyway, that's when you see community service people, not in front of like the main community center in Smallville. That's the challenge.
Like, do you expect there to be a lot of trash around here? Well, clearly there is.
Well, we need to have Clark out on Route 8 picking up trash that we need. Lex comes by, and they talk a little bit about what's going on with the lawsuit, because Clark is now being sued by Andy. He's being sued for $1 million, because Andy claims that there's been, like, irrevocable damage to his livelihood because he's injured, and he's in a neck brace, and he has a cane and all this stuff. Again, I don't know why Lex doesn't offer to pay it off. Because that's what Lex does. Maybe the cancer would be like, or especially John's like, oh, we're not taking that Luther body, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what I would expect him to say. So they just like don't bother with it.
Yeah, exactly. So it'd be such an easy out. Like, well, you got this rich friend in Lex. Why don't they just take advantage of that? But because we know Jonathan has his grudge against Luther, so it doesn't happen. They talk a little bit about Lana as well. And Lex says not to worry about Lana, that the crouching tigress is about to find her hidden dragon. And I was like, oh, facepalm. For such a topical reference to Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which had come out around this time, which was, that was like such a big thing in pop culture for years, wasn't it? Or not, if you don't.
Oh, sorry. I didn't expect that. Like, oh yeah, back in the 2000s, like it was all karate moves, all the craze. I didn't expect that throw.
Yeah, no, it's all good. No, that, and there were so many parodies of that, right? Of like, you know, people on
like
wires.
The One came out around then.
Yeah, the one. me and my friends used to joke about The One, like, are they going to make a sequel? Are they going to call it The 1-2? And then, you know, like, it's complicated. They never made a sequel, but anyway. But this transitions us into Lex training Lana. And for some reason, the punching bag they're using is just hanging in the main Luther office. They're starting to get real lazy about these locations, because what I appreciated in season one, there was lots of locations in Luther Mansion. The characters wear more than one outfit, right? But as we get into season two, you see like two rooms in Luther Mansion, and everyone wears the same clothes almost every week, right? So it's like the shrinking of the universe. So I will say that, because what happened to that awesome gym Lex had in Zero? Remember that, when he's like, you know, like working out and gets confronted in there and all that stuff? It's like its own warehouse, which you would expect from a Luther Mansion estate, not to have everything in this one office, right?
I didn't even think of that. Like, why is this bag just hanging there? Like, what is it doing? Like,
you know how high the ceiling is? Private room. You know how high the ceiling is in that room? How long that chain has to be?
Hey, they're rich. They could do anything.
That's true. That's true. Luther's like, yeah, bring it. Yeah, I want the punching bag in my office. Like, not a problem. I mean, my question in my head was, did they really save that much money by filming in the same room? And the answer is, of course, yes, they did. Because, I mean, they don't have to... You know, when they do TV, like, if they went to another location, that's a whole different setup, the crew, time, lighting, all those little things that you don't think about when they make TV shows. I totally understand practically why they do this stuff in the same sets, but still, it kind of breaks the illusion of, Lex has this awesome mansion with all these rooms and all these things, and but everything takes place in this in the Luther Library, I think is what they call it. I mean, that's a strong term for library. I mean, there are some books in it, but you know,
like sometimes this room has a pool table in it. Sometimes it has like a whole like back room in it.
So I did laugh at the music steadily turning up here. I don't even know which song it was. I have a list of the music from this episode of it, but I don't know. Again, this episode probably the most egregious use of pop music. This scene as well, and then at the end when Lana, you know, goes full Kung Fu Lana, full Chung Lee. And I say that because Kristen Kirk, did you ever see The Rise of Chun-Li?
I can't say that I ever did or ever sort it out.
Well, we've covered it on this podcast when it's all said and done, because, you know, that was Kristen Kirk. That's why she wasn't in season 8, because she was making this movie. Or that's why she wasn't at the end of season 7, I should say, and had to come back for season 8, because she could not fulfill her contract like Rosenbaum, because she signed up for this movie during the writer's strike, which, hey, we recently avoided a writer's strike. Yay for Hollywood. But anyway, that's where that movie comes
from. Yeah, that ruined a lot of my favorite shows, like Heroes never recovered from that.
Heroes, right? And we always talk about Heroes, and all jokes aside, if I ever do a true sequel podcast to this, it would probably be called Always Still on Heroes, because I have so many strong opinions about it that need to be shared, as you can tell by me working into almost every point of conversation on this podcast. But what better venue to talk about Heroes than this Smallville podcast? I like season 2 of Heroes in retrospect. I think that it's a lot better when you see where the series turned into. I feel like had the writer's strike not happened, they would not have radically changed gears so much for season 3, and they would have continued on the story they were telling in season 2, and it would have all come back around. Because I think the biggest problem in season 2 is with Heroes, you skip ahead 6 months, and they always do this, like 6 months later, 3 months later, 2 weeks earlier, like, just tell,
everything's changed.
Yeah, just tell the normal story. Like, I have no point of reference for anything's going on. So the last 4 episodes of season 2, if you watch them all together, they're really good, because they're a great follow-up to season 1, which we wanted. Like, here's what happened to who, here's who went where, here's what's going on, you know. And I really like Ad Monroe, the Caucasian Kinsei. he's a great character.
Currently in CW's iZombie.
Yes, yes. And he was a guest stop, had a guest spot on Arrow season 1, who was great to see there. And he was also, as I understand it, he had a recurring role on Alias as well, but I never watched Alias, so sorry, Jennifer Garner. But he's a great actor, and I think he was great in Heroes, and they wasted his character away in season 3, but I think he was a great antagonist for season 2. Such a great villain for a time travel and immortal guy, right? Perfect.
Yeah, like they, like, as like there are a bunch of really good ideas, even in the later seasons of Heroes, but like, I don't know, just like I'm with you, like, I did like a lot of season 2 as well, but yeah, like they just like really didn't really know what to do after that, especially like Silo became a good guy. That was okay for a little bit, but then it kind of just like,
well, the back and forth is the problem. Either make him a good guy or make him a bad guy. The back and forth and back. It's like Lionel Luthor in Smallville, right? Back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. It negates the awesomeness of his original villainy, right?
Yeah, but John Glover has enough charisma to make it work anyway.
Yeah, that's true. John Glover, it's like, yes, Lionel Luthor outstate is welcome, but John Glover's so amazing, I don't mind. And even so amazing, they brought him back after he was dead in season 10, because we're going to continue to spoil season 10 for you guys in the season 2 episode. Where were we at here? So Lana's learning how to fight, and she's punching this bag, and the music's like, yay, girl power, yeah! I mean, I guess that's where they're going with it, right? Which, again, there's a place for that. And I understand, like, this episode, it kind of tackled, I guess, some real issues more than Smallville does, I guess, the best way to put it. Because, you know, abuse and harassment and you know, self-empowerment and all that stuff, that's great for women, especially because there are a lot of women who watch Smallville, obviously. It's on the WB, and a lot of strong female characters on it. But I don't know I don't think everything meshed quite right. And we'll get into that in the climax of the episode. But anyway, Lana is learning self-defense here. But Clark, you know, Clark's still out doing his community service, and he sees Andy, and he sees him coming out of a store across the street with his neck brace and a cane and all that. And, he's helped him to his car by his frat boy friends, and Clark goes to try to talk to him and says, hey, we can't afford this. He's like, hey, stay away from me, man. I got a protective order. Blah, look what you did to me. I'll see you in court. And then Clark uses his x-ray vision when the car drives off, and he sees that Andy, like, taking off the neck brace, and they're like, I love not only the fact that as he take off the neck brace and throw, like, the cane in the back, that you can clearly see that they're all pulling out some beer and drinking as well, which is just to really put it over the top, right?
Did you, well, when Clark walked across the street, did you notice the sign on the talon, like, what it said?
No, what did it say?
It said, like, you don't see the first word, but it was, like, blank, so fresh you want to slap it.
Oh,
I don't know what
no.
that first word is. I don't know what the first word is. I think it's some kind of, like, comedy thing, but, like, it was just, like, I couldn't make out what the first one is. And I was like, why do I want to slap something? I don't understand.
Again, highly inappropriate in an episode talking about, like, abuse and, you know, Clark exactly. using his powers. Like, what's your angle here, Sho? What are you doing? Oh, man.
But no, you see Andy in the car just, like, high-fiving, having a good time. Just, like, he's not trying to hide it at all. I'm assuming those windows weren't tinted. Like,
yeah,
anybody sees that.
Government-issue tinted windows. Like, could you have waited until you, like, drove off a little bit? But,
Well, like, not in the vicinity of the guy you're suing?
To this whole point that we're having here about all this... What's the show's angle with this whole plot line? Later on at the Kent Farm, Chloe comes by and gives Clark some female perspective, which I guess was the point of the episode again, but it was not handled too well because she's like, yeah, Clark, I mean, you're a 6 foot whatever guy. You don't have to worry about footsteps behind you late at night and all that stuff. And this is all true. This is all good stuff. But I do appreciate the fact that they didn't mix any kind of kryptonite freak of the week in this episode, right? But it was kind of double dose on, like, I don't know, the domestic violence, if you will. I guess that's how the best to describe it. Because, you know, Lana had her thing and Helen had her thing, but they didn't, like, intersect it all except that one scene at the beginning. And I don't know, like, maybe they just tried to do it all in one punch instead of, like, oh, gosh, that's a bad analogy. Sorry. But so good you want to slap it. But see, I did it too. I forgive you guys, Marvel. But they tried to shove it all into one episode, so it feels, like, kind of overwhelming. It doesn't fit. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it was like at a certain point, like I actually, one of the points that I was going to point to in my my grade for the episode was that I did kind of like how it was like edging away from that like superpowered threat, mm-hmm. but at a certain point, like it does like stop feeling like a small little episode when you deal so heavily with these like real world things.
Mm-hmm. Well, Helen, getting on this point again, Helen is in the most sinister looking hallway and hospital room I've ever seen. I don't know why she's down there.
And is it just me? I was like, is this hospital closed? Like, the hospitals don't close. Like there's like dark, like dank hallway, and nobody's there. She's calling out for this doctor that's just supposed to be here. Like, these doctors are supposed to be like people all around this hospital, but there's nothing here.
Yeah, I can only assume that Paul cut the power or something, because she goes down looking for some doctor, and he's like, he's the one that placed the page or something, right? And then he goes. He goes full psycho on her. Like, he's like, we're meant to be together, right? It's like, oh my gosh, right?
He's like, you don't love me, Helen, but you will.
Yeah, oh my gosh. So while this struggle is going on between Helen and Paul, Lex is called, and he hears the struggle, and he shows up, and she is in bad shape when he shows up, huh?
Yeah, like she's like, you just see when Paul's, like, going at Helen, he's just, like, throwing her into these, like, shelves and stuff. And, like, she looks like she's like, an inch away from death. And then, like, Lex comes in and is like, Helen, no. And, like, you think she's going to die. And, like, by the end of the episode, she's completely fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, maybe they were going to kill her here. But, no, they said the wedding day, so I don't know. And she was a long-term guest star, too. They weren't going to kill her off in, you know, a few episodes before the finale. You got to save that stuff for, like, finale or, like, February sweeps or something, you know, not these episodes, not these like April episodes. They're just trying to wrap things up to get to the finale. But we cut from this intense scene, right, to Clark and Lana at the Talon devising a plan to catch Andy in the act, because Clark says that he knows that he's faking his injury. I think he told Chloe earlier that I followed him to his house. It's like, okay, sure. Sure you did. We don't hear their plan, but we can kind of guess what it is, right?
By the end of it, I'm still not quite sure what the plan was and like and how exactly it worked out in their favor.
Because it escalated very quickly, but we'll get into that. We're almost there. We'll get into that in a minute. But for some reason, Clark comes to the hospital, I guess, to check on Helen. But he sees Lex storm off. Lex had just had a pretty heated conversation with Sheriff Adams. And I love what he said. She's like, Mr. Luther, I hope you're not planning on taking the law into your own hands. He's like, what are you going to do, arrest me? Make me pick up trash? So good.
Such a great callback.
But Lex, you know, storms off in his car to go check on Paul, because he's had a man on Paul this whole time, kind of monitoring him, and now he can't get in touch with him, but he knows where Paul is, so that's where he's going, to his seedy looking hotel. Now, lucky for Clark, he runs into Sheriff Adams, and he hears her and her deputy talk about, like, oh, we have a warrant for the room at his hotel, we're going to be there. So of course Clark super speeds there, beats him there. He runs into Lex. They find the guy, the tail that Lex had put on Paul, like, dead in the bathtub. Classic of, like, I'm gonna call his phone, and then they hear the phone ring. It's coming from the corpse in the bathtub. And, you know, we see that Lex before they leave, because, you know, the cops starting to come in, so Clark and Lex have to get out of there. We see Lex take the gun from his tail, so who had died in the bathtub. So at this point, we think, oh, Lex has a gun now, but if you find out later, Lex has two guns now. Because when we go to the train station, and this train station is used to this day on all the CW shows, I think.
I think I do remember it in, I think it was an episode of Arrow, where it's like, I think it was the Captain Boomerang episode. I'm pretty sure that was in a train station. Like, it might have been this one.
Specifically that one, and I think we've seen it on The Flash as well. But, you know, I mean, that's fine. I'm not, this is not a complaint, it's an observation, okay?
Yeah, I do. Like, I do enjoy these callbacks.
Right, for sure. They go to the train, because they've traced Paul, because Lex has a low jack on the car of
his tail. But I thought police only had access to low jack.
Yeah. Shut up, Clark. You've been friends with Lex for 2 years now, don't you know?
You know the score.
But Lex and Clark, they chase Paul through the trains, and the train station is a pretty good set piece, I think. Paul goes into a train car. Lex falls in. I swear, and I'm gonna cut the music in here so you guys can let me know. This sounds like a sped up version of the Twilight Zone theme. So here it is, guys. So Mark Snow ripping off the greats music. I mean, anyway, it's very specific. Like if CBS cared, they would sue. But I guess CBS owns the CW now, so I guess they can. But anyway,
but it was just what you were saying. Like, I think you're saying that the director for this episode was known for like the more like the suspense, like horror kind of stuff. And like this whole episode, like was very like leaning towards that. Like even like with his music, gave that like that really. Like high tension kind of feeling to it, and it was actually really well done, I thought.
Yeah, no, the atmosphere, the episode gets an A+ for atmosphere. I give it that. And you know, we're not in Luther Mansion, and we're not on the farm, right, or in the barn or whatever. We're in a new location. But Paul and Lex fight on the train. Lex overpowers him, and this is another instance of what I think is Clark having super hearing before he quote unquote got super hearing. Because Lex and Paul are struggling here, and Clark doesn't know where they are, so he turns his head like as if he heard something. Because there's a clear shot of Lex going like, "Ugh," you know.
Yeah, it was like almost some. It was almost like intuitive. Like he just like he knew which way to look. So like,
Lex is in danger.
I definitely agree. Yeah, it's like my Lex sense is tingling.
Right. This is something I say this every time this comes up because I want to keep making it a point because I'm not a fan of the episode Whisper. I do not like how they went about him getting his super hearing. Like if Clark had never gone blind for a while, he would have never got super hearing. Is that what the episode implies? I don't know. But there are several instances on this show where you know in the early first you know 2 or 3 years where it's inferred that he has super hearing. We just don't, it's just not a thing that you see. And I always interpreted super hearing as like strength and speed, just a better sense than other people, right? X-ray and heat vision, flight and all that, super breath, like that's something else. But super hearing, I just thought, oh, he can run faster, he's stronger, and he can hear better, right? That was my thought.
And it would make sense that like something like hearing would be kind of like a reflex muscle for him, but like a superpower.
Right. But they had to make it. They just had to go make an episode about it. But anyway, we'll get into that next season. But
I'm sure it was advertised like this is the episode where Clark gets his superhero.
Yeah. Oh yeah, every time, right? But for the second time this season, Lex is almost killed by an axe. But Clark super speeds and hits the train. This is a good save by Clark. Unlike in Lineage, where he super speeds in between the axe and Lex, he was very lucky that one, Rachel Dunleavy was crazy, and two, Lex was unconscious, or his secret would totally be out there. But this time,
I was gonna say, he doesn't need to knock anybody out this time.
Yeah, he doesn't even knock him out. He just knocks the train car off balance. So Lex gets the gun. By the way, Lex it's established now Lex has two guns, his plan is to plant the other gun on Paul and say that he killed him in self defense. So well done, Lex, right?
Yeah, that was the perfect Lex plan. Just like you can see him just like wiping that gun and throw it out. Yeah. Like, what are you doing, Paul? Like, you must know what's happening here.
Your life is getting complicated, I've warned you. Lex gets the gun. He almost kills Paul, but he doesn't. And the sheriff shows up, and then he plays it off as a citizen arrest, right? which is still legal in Kansas, apparently.
And then classic Cher just like gives us like that snarky line. I'm not sure what it was, but just like she like had that smirky smile. I'm just like, okay, this is where I came to love Sheriff Adams.
Well, she sees Clark there, and she like gives him a smirk, and she's like, I think she's like chewing gum or something. She's like, yep, or whatever. Now, this scene kind of confused me though, because watching it, you know, again watching with this analytical eye, she's talking to Lex, right? She's talking to Lex. We get a cutaway to Clark. We cut back to her. She does not change the direction that she's looking. But but she continues to talk to Clark. And I was very confused because she's like, yep, you need to stay out of police business. And I'm like, she's talking to Lex? I'm like, oh, no, she's talking to Clark. Okay, like go rewatch it again, folks. Tell me if you see the same thing, because I was very confused because, like, somebody needed to tell Camille Mitchell, like, hey, can you turn to the left now because you're talking to Clark, not Lex. Anyway, that kind of threw me off.
Going back to like I think it was that where Clark. Sorry to go back so far, but like Clark was this is where Clark was like checking on Helen at the hospital. Like there was another instance of Sheriff Adams telling him not to like in like go into police business, and then she immediately tells the police officer next to her like where the person would be. I was like, you're not helping the situation here, Adams.
Sloppy writing. They got to get people from point A to point B. But yeah, it's like, okay, let's wait till we get in our car to talk about this. They're in front of the entrance to Smallville Hospital. Anyone can hear that. That's crazy. Anyway, no procedure, as you said, no procedure.
This is one of the things that I love. It's like just like I don't know, like, because it just like made me think that like Sheriff Adams was a little bit like incompetent, but then like I don't know how to think about this character at the
moment. Yeah, no, you're right. I think the retrospect does help for her, because when she first shows up, you're like, oh, what is this? But you revisit it, and you're like, it's charming in a way, right?
Yeah.
So then we get our big climax of the episode here, I guess, because, you know, as awesome as Lex's plots are, in even the most questionable episodes of Smallville, he's usually the B plot, right? Clark and Lana are usually the A plot. And so, and because the Lana story ties into the Clark story, that by default makes it the A plot. So this is our resolution of the A plot here, and it gets resolved last, which of course the main one would be. And we get Andy come back to the town. Apparently, Lana had invited him there. And I don't as you mentioned before, I don't understand what their plan was, Jazz. What did you make of this?
I think the initial like idea of the plan is like try to like make it like so he reveals that he's not really injured, but I don't see how the events that came after it would like help their case. Just like, cause she ends up assaulting him. Like, and if anything, like that would give him more evidence to like to put against Clark and Lana.
Right, but he just immediately jumps to assault again. Like he's like, why don't we take this in the back? I'm like, what are you talking about? Like what?
Yeah.
All this guy thinks about is rape, apparently. And I'm like, this is really intense for Smallville, and I don't think they treat it with the weight it deserved.
It's so weird because like Andy comes into the town and like after Lana has called him and the first thing is like I knew you wanted me. I was like, what are you talking about, man? Like how is this what your mind jumps to?
Violence is not the answer, right? And it's just a poor resolution. And I think, and this I was digging this episode more than I had been in the past up until this point. But this I don't know what their angle was here. Right, because it's like, oh, violence. The answer to violence is more violence. Like she drop kicks him. She does her. This is the classic like Lana kung fu kick we'll know to love or as the seasons progress here. And
it's a hidden dragoness.
Yeah. There it is, man. The rise of Chun-Li begins. And I don't know, man. It was just I don't know what they should have done, but I don't think this is what they should have done. Like, here's the deal: they should have just gotten like I don't know, gotten on camera or some kind of reveal that you know, like oh, he's not crippled and whatever, but we had to have, that would have been resolution for Clark, but Lana needed her sense of empowerment back, right? Because you know, as Lex says very early on in the episode, this has always been a safe place for you, the Talon, and that's been violated. Although, lots of crazy stuff has happened at the Talon, so I'm not sure exactly how, I mean, the episode where it opened, like, they got a box with a hand in it, you know, and Zero, for example, and then, you know, Tina Greer was there, threw Lana into a wall a few episodes ago. Like, some stuff has gone down at the Talon, right? They've had a shooting in the back alley, you know, so.
This is just another Tuesday. It should be for her at the moment.
Oh, yeah. So yeah, questionable resolution. To me, that's what really dropped the episode down in grade, which we'll get into in a second here. But
because then, like, the next scene, like, you see Lana visits Clark in the barn, and all they say is just, Andy dropped the lawsuit. And then Clark's like, but I hear you got a hell of a spinning back kick. I was like, I don't understand how this went from one point to the other.
This reminds me of, like, and I don't blame it for the time because it was the 60s, but this tone-deaf ending to episodes, like in Star Trek, the original series. I'm a huge Star Trek fan. And some horrible stuff would happen in episodes, right? Then at the end, they'd be like on the bridge making a joke about Spock. Like, ha, 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 ha. You know, they pan out and everybody's laughing at me. Because I'm like, do you realize this entire colony of people just died? Does anyone care about this? Like, it's not very congruous, but for what we just saw.
It's like, they're obviously trying to, like have, like, a message through the episode. Where it was just like, I'm not sure what, like, exactly what they're aiming for. Maybe just, like, assault is not okay. And, like, that's obviously something that many people should already know. But, like that was, like, kind of, like, what they were trying to say. And then, like, they don't really, like, hammer it home at the end of the episode. And it just, like, kind of nullifies what you were trying to say in the first place.
Yeah, it's, again, a good first draft, and I've said this before. Because I think you could say this about any television show. Like, if there's a questionable episode, like, they got 22, 26 episodes they got to pump out. Some are going to, like, get rushed. You know, I feel like, man, if they had another pass at this, they might have been able to tie everything together better with a more satisfying conclusion that made a little more sense and was a little less, like, again, tone deaf to what they were trying to talk about. But Alana does say she was happy she got to save Clark for once, which was, you know, that's cute, right?
And then just, like, his reaction is just so, it's kind of a little bit awkward on Tom Welling's part, because there's just, like, a silent pause, and then just, like, yeah.
I didn't think of it that way before. But then you know the episode is on the right track when Lex has the last scene, right? So we go to Luther Mansion, and we get the song Don't Fear the Reaper in the background. Now, this is not the original version, but it's the cover version by Gus. Are you familiar with this song at all, and do you have a preference between the two of them?
I would probably prefer the original, but this was a little bit more I think it was like definitely a lot more subtle, like in terms of like the way it was played out, like, because you said there's a cover of the original, yeah.
Yes, yeah. So it's a little more like melancholy, right? As most of the most of the songs on Smallville are like the Gary Jules cover of Mad World, which I do prefer to the original, Tears for Fears version.
It did just seem as a little bit of a weird song to choose for the events that occur.
That's true, like. Death?
Till death do us part, I suppose.
Right, I'm sure there's a tie in there. Sure. But it's kind of unsettling, because you're like, what is this? And you know Lex and Helen is not going to end well. Like, you don't know when, but you know it's not going to end well down the road.
Were they still planning to kill her off at this point?
Yeah, was that part of the music selection, or was that just the WB saying you have to use these songs? Like, these songs brought to you by the WB. Like, yeah, I mean, you didn't see it back in the day, but on the WB and live, or, you know, when they broadcast them at the end of the show, they'd be like, music from tonight, Smallville was brought to you by, and they show all like the albums, like, available now on the WB.com. So it was one of those things that this nostalgia factor is so strong for me when I see those little ads. But I wonder, like, how much I do wonder, and at some point when I interview someone from the show officially, I'm going to ask them, like, what is the procedure between, like, here's some songs that you need to use and here's some songs that you want to use, and, like, how much, you know, that. So I'm curious to that, because, again, I love Smallville. Other than this episode in a few cases, they're pretty spot on with all the music. And then I like the song here, but as we were talking about earlier, it was some screwy choices earlier with the popular music. but this scene is a wrap up between Helen and Lex. And Lex explains that Paul pled temporary insanity, and Lex isn't going to fight it. He's going to say, fine, sure, whatever. But he tells Helen that he almost killed Paul, but and she says, like, oh, lucky Clark was there. He says, Clark didn't save me at that moment. You did. Like, oh, that's nice. But I do find it amusing that Helen immediately says, oh, good, I'm glad Clark was there. Like, even she sees the connection, the inappropriate connection between Clark and Lex. What is it with you and this kid? And his young ward, Dick Grayson, right? but Lex proposes here, right? So we get a proposal. She's moved in recently, so this is the next logical step. Depending on what order you do things in, I'm more of a traditional guy myself. And, of course, they're in front of the fireplace, too, which, again, with the music adds to kind of the more ominous thing, because there's so many cool scenes with Lex and Lex and Lionel or whoever in front of the fireplace at Luther Mansion, right?
Now, is Helen marriage number two or number one?
Now, this is going to be number two. Now, they haven't had the wedding yet, so it's not an addition. I'm not counting engagements on the tally board. I'm just counting weddings. I guess I could have done either. Maybe I should have. I don't know. It's shaky ground, right?
And then there's a third that we all know.
There is a third that we all know about, that we all know and love, which in retrospect, which I'm glad you brought that up, it makes this episode extra creepy, does it not?
Yes, there's a little bit of a like perhaps seeds planted in this early in early this episode that like I don't know if you're I don't think you're a fan of that development, but
no, not at all.
It's yeah, like it wasn't the best.
But anyway, this scene is not about Lex and Lana. This scene is about Lex and Helen, and you know, it's a good scene between them. Again, all future occurrences aside, it's a good scene, and the episode ends with "Don't feel the reaper," and there we have it.
My lawyer told me that Paul is pleading temporary insanity.
Alexa,
I told him not to fight the plea. Paul needs help. I wanted to kill him, Helen. I wanted to kill him for what he did to you. I probably could have gotten away with it in everyone's eyes, but one person would have known the truth.
Clark?
You. Clark didn't save me in that moment, Helen. You did. And that's when I knew. So what do you say, Dr. Price? Will you marry me?
Precipice got an 8.1 out of 10 on IMDb, which is higher than I would have expected. And then the Superman homepage, Neo Bailey gave it 5 out of 5, which is, again, higher than I expected. And like I said, revisiting this episode, it was better than I had remembered, but still wasn't that high. But, you know, Jazz, here on Always Sold in a Smallville, we give it the letter grade score. So on the scale of A to F, what would you give Precipice?
See, like, I'm with you. Like this is one that, like, once I heard your interpretation about the episode, I was kind of just not really like looking forward to it. But I thought it was a lot better than I expected. So I would probably give it a B, like middle of the road kind of. Like it wasn't like on the high end of Smallville episodes, but it also wasn't I didn't hate like spending 40 minutes to go through it. And like I watched it a couple times in preparation for the episode, and I didn't really once feel like bogged down ever watching it, so I thought it was pretty good, so I'd give it a B.
Yeah, for me, I, you know, going into this, I was thinking this would be like a D plus or something. Like, I really like thinking back at season 2, like, you have your Reduxes, right, stuff like that. It's like the obvious terrible episode, but then you have, you know, episodes like this, and it just, I don't know, for whatever reason, like, this was right down there at the bottom with me in my memory. But watching it again, I was like, this is a lot better. But then again, the end, I know we're hammering this pretty hard, but like the end with like the resolution to the, like, you know, abuse subplot or main plot didn't quite hit. So I just think if not for the awful resolution to the Clark, Lana, Andy situation, it would have had a higher score. But I'm going to go with C+, which to me, though, is higher than I thought. So I'll still consider this one a win in that category. So
yeah, the main negative was definitely that wrap up of like, how did this lawsuit end up getting resolved?
Yeah, that's about beating the guy up that accuses of beating him up. Clearly the only logical solution.
I'll give up a $1 million lawsuit so I can just like save my pride.
Exactly. So that's it for me. C+, for you, a B. So then we'll go to the tally board. There is not much to add to the tally board here. No one says the word precipice in this episode. I was hoping for that, but nobody did. Did that, and, you know, tangent real quick. Did you think that was an appropriate title for this episode, Precipice?
See, like, that was what I was gonna, like, I didn't really feel like, I guess Paul's on the precipice of, like, the, I was gonna say sanity and being crazy, but no, he was pretty crazy the whole way, so I wouldn't say he's on the precipice of that. Like, I didn't really think, like, it was, like, one, it was just one of those titles that, I think, like, they needed one word, and this is like the most ominous of the words that they could have chosen, I suppose.
Well, I've often thought of alternate titles for small episodes where I didn't think the title fit. So precipice, right? So I have an option here. But according to Merriam-Webster, precipice is, one, a very steep or overhanging place, which is what I have always interpreted as, like a physical location, right? Or two, a hazardous situation, right? So that's Merriam-Webster's definition of precipice. So I was like, a hazardous situation, maybe, I don't know. But doing some research, and I did this years ago. I remembered specifically looking this up. I don't know why, because I was just a nerd, right? But I was like, what's another word I can read this episode? So I looked it up, and I think conniption would have better title for this episode. That's a $100 word for you, right? But according to Merriam-Webster, conniption is a fit of rage, hysteria, or alarm. So, because Clark goes into a rage here, right? And there's hysteria going on. So I feel like that would have been a more appropriate title for this episode, based off that.
I was going to say, that there already is a... Is there an episode called Rage in the series? I'm sure there is.
There is. It's the Thanksgiving episode.
Okay. That's appropriate.
It all makes sense. It's basically, you know, Oliver on roid rage. And then they have Thanksgiving at the end. And Lionel Luther comes to the Kent family table for Thanksgiving. And Jonathan is spinning in his grave. But anyway... 217 episodes, they can only use one word titles. Again, that's something I want to ask, you know, knock on wood, when I get to interview, you know, someone who's been, you know, producer or director or some creative force on the show. Like, what's the deal with the titles? Did you decide we're only gonna have one word? Did you write like 3 or 4 episodes and realize that, hey, we're only using one word, let's go with it for the next 5 seasons, not knowing they'd go for 10 seasons or something, right?
Just, but, like, what locks you into this, like, this trope? Like, you don't need to do this.
Oh man, but it's so good. It makes them easier and harder at the same time to remember, right? All the episode titles. But anyway, that was a tangent. There is no episode title set in this episode. That was completely useless tangent, but I enjoyed it. I wanted to get my conniption mentioned in there. But the only thing I have on the title board is a hospital visit, right? And you help me decide here, Jazz. I don't know if it's +1 or +2. I have +1 for Paul, obviously. Is it +2 for Helen? Because she got attacked at the hospital, and then we know she's in the hospital while we're there. So would it be +2? What do you think? I'll let you decide.
I would probably say no, just because, like, Helen was already at the hospital when she was attacked, and she presumably would have stayed there. So I wouldn't, because Lex didn't leave and then come back, did he?
No, she was, as you said, she was completely fine by the end of the episode. So
I probably have to stick with just the one hospital visit. All right. Sorry to say.
Well, you heard it from Jazz, guys. Just a +1. So that's going to bring us to 25. 25 hospital visits, and we're not.
Don't worry, I'm sure the future episodes will be like, you'll be good for a couple more.
If we don't get 100, I'm gonna be shocked. I'm very excited to see what the final tally. And this tally board is getting more and more amusing as the show goes on, and you really start to see, like, man, like something like hospital visits, it's a lot. I mean, I knew it was a trope, that's why I made it a tally board item, right? But it's so high. There's so many, as opposed to something like a student death at Smallville High School. I thought students were dying, like, you know, the cliche is, oh man, don't go to Smallville High School, you're not going to make it out alive, right? But, I mean, there's only been like 4, I think, off the top. I'm not looking at Talbert right now. Forgive me, fans. I think it was like 4 right now, so I would have thought it would have been a lot higher. But and then, finally, our Bechdel test is a fail, as you mentioned earlier. There is no scene where two women talk to each other, not about a man. So that's our Talibor for this week. And yeah, that's our episode. So Jasmine, a lot of fun. I'm glad we were able to work this out with, like I was saying, time zones and technical difficulties and all that. We've overcome it. We've overcome this precipice, and we are good, man. So what's so if people want to find you on the internet, man, what's the best way to do that?
Well, I guess like most of my, like, you can find me on Twitter at @JazzKeegan. But most of my tweets are basically about basketball these days. So I'm like you might be able to find me on there, maybe, like, if you follow me, that's cool. If not, that's cool as well.
So if you enjoyed the first 30 minutes of this episode, you might enjoy your Twitter feed, is what you're saying. So.
Exactly. And maybe it'll kickstart, like, a always hold on to the Rockets podcast, like we said at the start of the episode.
So if you want more of that conversation, go follow Jazz on Twitter. And, you know, is your podcast still out there? I know you're not doing it anymore, but people want to find it.
Yeah, like, you can find the podcast, like, if you want to find any of the old episodes, basically the latest one, I think we stopped it around like the first week of the NBA season, just because me and my co-host were like, the timing was kind of it was difficult to coordinate. So I think, like, it's the first week of this current season is where we stopped, which is such bad timing because we're having such a good season this year. But you can find the, I'm pretty sure the feed is still up there. It's called Three Men and a Beard. That was just a title that we just came on the fly and it seemed to work. So
reference to three men and a baby and James Harden's beard, I assume.
Yes, and like the fact that none of the hosts have beards, and like the fact that I've never seen Three Men and a Baby. I just like, came up with it out of nowhere. But yeah, you can find all those old episodes, and maybe one day we'll come back.
Hey man, I know how it is. I mean, we had quite an extensive hiatus here because podcasting is no easy task. It is truly a labor of love. So you gotta enjoy it. You gotta have fun with it. You gotta have time for it. You know, and real life always has to come first, people. Like this, as much fun this is, right? Like I enjoy sitting here talking about Smallville for hours every week with everybody, putting the shows together. But real life has to come first. So you know, we all have seasons where we have time for this and times we don't. So hopefully my goal still is to finish this, wrap the show up by 2020, 2021, which is absurd to say out loud, but there are 10 seasons, guys, and we have like just over 8 more to go. So
we're all looking forward to it.
Absolutely. So as for me personally, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoronZach. I'm tweeting about the Rockets, the Astros right now are having a great season, you know, and all kinds of random stuff that comes our way. And I'm also the host of another podcast on the Trek FM network, Standard Orbit, where we talk about each and every episode of Star Trek The Original Series. See, I jumped into my normal Smallville spiel there, each and every episode. But no, we talk about the adventures of Captain Kirk and the Enterprise, the new and old adventures, you know, William Shatner and Chris Pine. So that's a lot of fun. I do that with my friend Ken Tripp, and we are on Trek FM. You can find us on Twitter at Trek FM or search on Facebook Trek FM. So if you're a Star Trek fan, definitely check that out. I think it's a pretty good podcast, but I'll let you guys be the judge. Also, for the podcast itself, you can find us at Always Smallville on Twitter with 1S. You can find us on Facebook at Always Sold on Smallville. And you can send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com. Okay, Jazz, man, I want to thank you again for being on, man. We'll definitely have you on again. This was a lot of fun. I look forward to it. So maybe next time around we can talk about what a great championship run the Rockets had in 2017. What do you say?
Yes, fingers crossed, Zach, and I guess the only thing I have left to say is don't fear the Reaper.
perfect. Well, until next time, guys, we'll be back talking about Witness. But until then, always hold on to Smallville. So come on, baby, take my hand.